What we are doing in here, starting a little late, give people time to... Oh, that's okay, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Oh, come on. Is we are taking a theme from the Bible and tracing it from Genesis all the way to Revelation. And the reason that we are saying we can do this is because this is what we believe, that the Bible is a theologically unified, historically rooted, progressively unfolding and ultimately Christ-centered narrative of God's covenant work in our world to redeem sinful humanity and all of creation. Basically, what we're saying is, yes, the Bible has 30-plus human authors. Yes, it was written over thousands of years of history. But there's actually one central author whose name is God, and he is writing the story. And therefore, there's this unity of themes that when you see it, it really is amazing. And it's progressively unfolding, meaning that what you see in Genesis, okay, meaning the same truth is talked about through all Scripture, but as you walk through the Bible, like you're turning on light slowly in a room, that truth becomes more and more clear and more fleshed out as you walk through the Bible. And so Genesis, the light's kind of are dim. They come on more, you know, in Psalms and then the prophets, and then they radiate with light with the coming of Jesus. But it's the same truth, but that theme gets unfolded. So what's at least been fun for me is I've actually learned a lot as I've been studying this. And so being that it was Easter Sunday, I'll admit I was trying to find a theme. I was like, okay, what's a theme around resurrection that runs throughout all the Bible? And I discovered one. I'd never really unpacked this before. And it's thanks to our friends at the Bible Project. So much of this comes from this paper. You can look it up from this guy, Derek Hibbert. But it's about a third-day resurrection, okay? Here's the theme, all right? The three-day timeline matters to the biblical narrative, right? If you're here, Easter, we're saying that on the third day, Jesus rose again. Thank you for being a janitor. Good man. That's right. Because on the third day, it's the special day on which God creates new life and activates his covenant with humanity. And that actually is a theme that you begin to see in Genesis and keeps being developed throughout the Old Testament. So that once you see this theme, you realize that Jesus keeps telling everybody, I'm going to be raised on the third day. That's not random. It's because God has shown you that it's the third day that he brings about life and enacts a covenant with humanity. So, before I dive in, this one's a little harder. We've been doing this again, but can anybody, besides the fact that Jesus himself was resurrected on the third day, which obviously we're going to talk about that, anybody think of any other stories that could be resurrection themselves or kind of glimpses of resurrection that happen on the third day? I think these are kind of hard. Annie? Yes. Man, go Annie. Actually, and we're going to look at this, that on the third day of creation is the first time that life actually sprouts forth from the ground. Very interesting. On the third day of creation is the first time that plants and things yielding fruit come about. Go, Annie. That's my daughter. Yes. What else? Jonah. And we're going to talk about him, who really personifies Israel as a prophet who is running from God, who is rejecting God's call. God's call always to God's people in Israel has been to be a blessing to the nations. Jonah's supposed to do that. And he personifies what Israel's like, and he runs away from God. And the penalty of running away from God should be death. And what happens to Jonah? He goes into a tomb of sorts in the belly of a fish. And 3 days later, in a hilarious resurrection, is vomited out on dry land. And then kind of has a new chance, new life to go and proclaim that. Yes, Jonah is one. Anything else? Look at y'all. This is awesome. See, even as you're thinking, like, wait, there are these little threads. Anything else? I feel like this is always like, but wait, there's more. Okay, well, look, let's do it. Let's walk through a few of these and see if you can't see how the Bible takes this theme that it's the third day where God usually brings life out of places of nothing or death. And in those places, many times, he enacts his covenant, this special relationship he has with his people that brings a new identity and a new purpose. So first, revealed by Annie Sorgen Fry. If you go to Genesis 1, it's really fascinating. Genesis 1 tells us there are 6 days of creation, two pairs of three, right? And if you think about the pattern, is there a pattern where on the third day, God brings life where there is no life? Okay, first day, he says, let there be light. There's light and darkness created. Day two, he says, let there be an expanse of waters, divides them. So you have the waters in the sky, the heavens, and you have the waters on the earth, right? Well, then the third day, we should. At this point, if you're reading the Bible, you don't have this expectation. The Bible's building it for you. The third day, he says, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together and let dry land appear. So now you have land, and then here we go. For the first time, God said, verse 11, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruits bearing fruit in which their seed, each according to its kind and on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation. So you have a world with water and light and darkness, but empty of life. But on day three, God speaks and life emerges where there is nothing. It comes out of the ground, vegetation, plants yielding seed, and now these other things that can produce life. And so the lights, right, are barely turning on, but you get this little glimmer. Again, if all you had is Genesis 1, you wouldn't think anything, but like, okay, seems like on the third day, but that's not all, because it's two periods of 3 days. Right, so the fourth day, there's lights in the sky to rule the day and the night, sun, moon, stars. Day five, let water swarm with living creatures, birds fly above the earth. Day six, the second, third day, the pinnacle of creation, from the earth, right, out of the ground comes living creatures. But then lastly, most amazing of all, God gets his hands dirty, and from the dirt, he forms humanity. He forms his own image. So the first day three, out of the place of nothing, out of the ground, you have plants and vegetation. And the second day three, more light comes. Okay, what's God doing? God forms humanity. And then he enters into a covenant with them. He enters into this special relationship with them where he blesses them. And he says, be fruitful and multiply. I've given you dominion over everything. You are my special creation. Reflect what I'm like. Obey me and you will live forever. So, all right, at the beginning at least, after the Genesis 1 and 2, you can say maybe there's a pattern. Maybe there's something about the third day where God brings life where there was nothing. He brings life out of the ground. And it seems on the third day, when it involves humanity, he enters into a special relationship with them, a covenant. And Greg Davidson talked about this 3 or 4 weeks ago. Eden, Ezekiel tells us this, is actually a high place. It's a mountain. And all this happens at a high place, all right, on a mountain, which is another thing that you're going to see. So this is the imagery from Genesis 1 and 2. Third day, covenant, and a high place. It's the prototype for resurrection, for when God makes new things, okay? So it's setting you up for that, all right? Then what you have, all right? Genesis 22. So the Lord comes to this person named Abraham, calls him. He's the one who's going to be the father of many nations. He's going to be the one who, through his offspring, the people of God are going to come and are going to bless the nations according to God. And he says it's going to be through your son Isaac. And then a test comes according to Genesis 22. And he says, take your son Isaac, the son that you love, and go to Mount Moriah, there's a high place, all right, and offer him as a sacrifice. Now, we can't get into this. Why is he asking for it? Look, well, actually, this goes back to last week if you're here. The firstborn is the representative of the family. So when he says sacrifice the firstborn, he is calling in the sins of Abraham. Okay, that's what he's doing. And Abraham knows that. He knows that he is being called to account for his sin. So here we go, right? He takes his son and he rose early in the morning. This is verse 3. saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. He cut the wood. He rose. He went to the place which God had told him. Here we go. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. So, lights are coming on. Abraham knows he deserves death. He knows this seems to be a hopeless situation. God is calling an account of his sin through his firstborn. But on the third day, he starts walking up a mountain. And what does God do? God provides a ram that dies in the place of Abraham's son, so that his son is spared. And so Abraham's life is spared in a real sense. Hebrews 11, look what it says. It uses resurrection language. This is the bottom. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises when the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. And so Isaac was as good as dead. But on a mountain, on the third day, God provides an atonement, a ram, and Abraham gets his son back. It's like a resurrection. So it's not just that God can sprout life from places of emptiness. Actually, you're getting this impression that God can bring about life from places that deserve to be dead, places that have actually been crushed by our own sin. Okay, so then you get to Exodus. Next giant event in redemptive history is God's people, the Israelites, have become so big in numbers, they are actually in Egypt. And that Pharaoh becomes scared of them, starts oppressing them, enslaving them. And God says, I'm going to release them. I'm going to free them. There's holding Passover. We don't have time to go into that. But they get to a Red Sea as the Pharaoh has said, finally, get out of here. So hundreds of thousands of God's people are backed up to a Red Sea. And all of a sudden, Pharaoh and the armies change their mind. They're like, what have we done? Why have we let these people go? And they start chasing after the Israelites. Okay, when the Israelites, with their backs to the Red Sea, see the armies of Egypt coming, do you know what they say? Anybody know? They say, were the tombs in Egypt not good enough for us? You just brought us out here for us to die. So guess what? God's people are at a place of death. It's hopeless. This might as well be a tomb for us. But what have we seen God doing? So God, miraculously through the Red Sea, spares them, gives them new life, kind of births a new nation. So what should we expect? We should expect something about the third day. We should expect something about a mountain. And here's what happened. As soon as they cross the Red Sea, they make it to a mountain, Mount Sinai, and here's what God says. Let's go to, oh gosh, did I miss it? Oh, I missed it. You're just going to have to trust me. I'm sorry. Verse 7 through the end, he says, on the third day, basically, go to the mountain, and on the third day, I will meet with you. And so they do. For 3 days, they wait. And God shows up on a mountain and he gives them the Ten Commandments, which is another covenant, saying, I have delivered you. And now I'm going to show you what it's like to live as my people. Obey these commands and you will be a blessing to the nations. It's on the third day and it's on a mountain and there's a covenant. And God has basically resurrected Israel from a place of death. Okay? So you see this pattern emerging that it's not just maybe a person that can be resurrected, but it's a whole nation. And then you get to 2 Kings. This one has nothing to do with third day, okay? This is just, when I was thinking about the resurrection and what are little glimpses you get in the Old Testament, this is like one of my favorite, I think, little-known stories. I actually think it's hilarious. So the prophet Elisha has died, and his bones are buried in this tomb. And bands of Moabites used to invade the land in the spring of the year. And as a man was being buried, behold, a marauding band was seen, and the man was thrown into the grave of Elisha. As soon as the man touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood on his feet. So think about this. This is at a time where Israel, the northern kingdom, is being whittled down. They're becoming weaker and weaker. So these enemies keep attacking Israel. And in those days, tombs were located outside the protection of the city walls. And so basically what you have is this funeral procession of this unnamed man going on outside the city walls. And all of a sudden they see a marauding, marauding kind of group of people coming to attack them. And so they freak out and they just take this unnamed dead man's body and they just throw it in the nearest grave and they start running back to the city to try to get inside the walls. So this funeral gets cut short because somebody yells, "They're coming for us." And so they just hastily throw it. This corpse somehow tumbles in, touches Elisha's bones, and the corpse revives. Like this man's heart starts beating again. Life comes back. I realize this isn't in the passage, okay? But this is what I think is funny. If you had been like the pallbearer that was like, you know, crying and all of a sudden the funeral got interrupted and you're like, "We got to get back to safety," and you just threw your friend into the tomb, you're running and you get back into the city walls and you're like, whew. And you look back and all of a sudden you see your friend that you just threw in the tomb come running behind you, right? Yeah. I mean, you're got to be like, "Am I hallucinating? What is going on?" Your dead friend is now 100 yards behind you running from the people too. I love that. Again, that's not third day, but you're getting these glimpses. Here's what you're getting. Prophets, okay, their role is to represent God to people through their words, through their actions. And even in Elisha, you get this little glimpse that a prophet, after his death, can resurrect you. That is a glimpse of Jesus, that there's something powerful about this prophet's death that can bring resurrection if you'll connect to it, okay? And then you get to Hosea, and I'm going to go quick here. Hosea 6, he's a prophet. He marries actually an unfaithful woman, which is amazing because God is saying, "I want you to understand what it's like for me to be married to my people, to us." To people who continually forsake him, who don't believe that he really loves us, who runs from him, and Hosea does that. And then Hosea starts speaking, and look what he says. He's warning Israel about running away from God, about thinking they can do life without him, about worshiping idols, and he's actually warning them that, "I'm telling you, captivity and exile to Babylon is coming," which is, really it would have been Assyria, which captivity to Assyria was like death, okay? And he says that's coming, but look what he says. He says, "Return to the Lord. He has torn us that he may heal us. He has struck us down. He will bind us up. After 2 days, he will revive us. And on the third day, he will raise us up that we may live before him." So look, Hosea is saying death and exile are coming because you keep running from God. You keep worshiping idols. But I'm telling you, on the third day, God can bring new life. God will bring you back to himself. Why does Hosea think this? Why does he start talking about third day? Yes, because God's character, because it's his pattern. But Hosea knows that in bare places, in places of hopelessness, in places of death, in places of disobedience, God keeps bringing new life and enacting covenants with his people. And so Hosea is saying, "I want you to believe this pattern." And then, like was already brought up, Jonah, who is one of Israel's prophets, but he is actually playing out what Israel is like. Israel is always told to be a blessing to the nations. They were supposed to show what God was like to the world so that the world would come in. And Jonah is told to go to the Ninevites to tell them about who God is. And Jonah says, "No way," and he runs the other way. And so what happens? The wages of sin is death. As Jonah is playing out that part, he gets thrown into the water and a fish swallows him and he goes into a tomb in a sense. And think about that belly of the fish. That place stinks with death, okay? It is a place of death. And on the third day, he gets vomited out. Resurrection, new life to Jonah. It's not over for Jonah. It's not over for Israel. Go bless the nations. And so as you make your way through the Old Testament, we did this quick skim. Here's what you're being pressed into this pattern that the unchangeable God has always been at work since Genesis 1. And there's this pattern. On the third day, he brings out life from the ground. He brings life to places of death. He brings resurrection from death, even that comes because of sin. And in those places of resurrection, there's a new covenant relationship with a God who does not give up. And many times those events happen on high places. So then, you probably can see where I'm going. Along comes this Jewish man who's claiming to be the long-awaited Messiah, the hope of the world, the promised one who is going to crush the head of the serpent, who may even defeat death. And he starts doing things that people are like, maybe this is him. He starts healing blind people. Even some people that are around Jesus get resurrected. And 21 times in the gospel, Jesus mentions that after 3 days, he'll be resurrected. 21 times. One time you see here in Matthew 12, he actually references Jonah and says, look, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. So he makes this, he's like, I'm telling you, what happened to Jonah is a picture of me. And then right in John 2, and there's a ton of other places, when Jesus is talking about the temple, he says, tear this down, I'll raise it in 3 days. Jesus is actually talking about his body. Jesus is talking about, because he is the place where God dwells. He is the place where God meets with his people. He's God in the flesh. And he's saying, on the third day, I will be resurrected. And so, there should be a pattern that we're expecting that God somehow, in a place of death, on a third day, on a high place, is going to bring resurrection that is going to bring new hope and a new covenant for all of humanity. And sure enough, there goes Jesus onto a high place called Golgotha, this mountain, this hill. And when Jesus hangs on a cross, what's so fascinating is he takes all the curses, right? We're talking about covenant. A covenant is simply a superior makes a vow with an inferior and makes these promises and says, if you'll do your part, I'll do my part. I'll provide you protection in life. You obey and trust me. And the truth is, we have never upheld our end of the covenant. We disobey him. We distrust him. And so we deserve these cursings. But when Jesus goes to the cross, you start realizing all these cursings, curses of covenant breaking, Jesus is taking on himself. Like, one of the first curses to Adam after he sins is that thorns and thistles will come from the ground, and by the sweat of your brow, you will bring about fruit. And there is Jesus wearing thorns and thistles on his head, and he's sweating drops of blood. He's literally taking the curse. And another curse to the woman is what? Is in pain, you shall labor and bear children. And there is Jesus moaning in pain on the cross. Why? Because he is birthing the church. He is bringing about his children. He is literally taking the curses on himself. And the ultimate curse, right, which is separation from God, wrath of God, death, disease, all that stuff goes on Jesus, and it crushes him and it takes him all the way into the tomb. Even though he was righteous, even though he was perfect, because he's taking our place. But on the third day, new life comes from the ground. New life that's actually going to produce new life and abundant life that's available for everyone who trusts him. It's new life that's going to bring a new covenant relationship that says the Spirit is dwelling in you. There's no condemnation for you, no matter what your past has looked like, because Jesus has been resurrected. He has brought new life. And so I love this quote right here because it takes you back to Genesis 1 and 2 where you think about God was walking with Adam and Eve in the garden, right? The cool of the day. G.K. Chesterton says this. He wants you to imagine the friend going to the tomb of Jesus, which is in a garden. Here it says, the friends of Christ coming at daybreak to the place found the grave empty and the stone rolled away. In varying ways, they realized the new wonder, but even they hardly realized that the world had died in the night. What they were looking at was the first day of new creation with a new heaven and new earth and an assemblance of the gardener God walking again in the garden in the cool, not of the evening, but of the dawn. Remember, Mary thinks that Jesus is the gardener. Like, he's back walking with them in a garden, but now it's a new day of creation. Now death has been rolled back. Now he's starting to make all things new. It's actually going to be better than the Garden of Eden. And so you have this right here. When we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus on Easter Sunday, we're not just following a historic tradition, though we are. We're engaging in a deeply meaningful theology centered around the third day and God's redemptive work. The third day design pattern is a reminder. God has initiated the process of resurrecting people to new life and bringing them into a covenant partnership. That's what the scripture was leading you to believe all the way through the Old Testament. That's why Jesus is adamant about dying and rising on the third day, because that is the place that he brings new life out of place of death, and that is where he enters into a beautiful relationship with people. So what does that mean for us? We'll spend the last 7 minutes kind of saying, what does it mean for us? Look, Ephesians 2 says, we were dead in our sins and trespasses, but God has made us alive. That God is at... Salvation means that God has done something for you. It is not that you have done something amazing for God. It is not that you have gotten your life together. It's actually that we believe God makes dead things come to life, and we are dead in our sin. And God made us alive. Which means, this is the pattern we should expect. Where will you meet God? Where will you find that God is near? It's probably not in the places where you're like, I got it all together. I aced all my classes. Life is going great. I'm crushing it in my job. Actually, most people's testimony of when they meet the resurrected Jesus is places where your life is falling apart. It's places where the stink of death is there and decay. Working in college ministry, I never heard a student say, "You know when I was converted? It's when life was awesome." And because I was doing awesome, I realized God was awesome. I never heard that testimony. It might have happened. Usually what happened, though, it was I felt the shame of my sin. I felt the guilt of what I've done. I felt the way that I've ruined relationships. And I realized I couldn't do it. And those are places of death. And there they found a God who brings life, who meets them in shame, who meets us overwhelmed with our guilt, and he takes it and he brings about new life. And so at least this morning, what this means for us is believing that a new day has actually begun for you. And you don't have to hide your wounds. You don't have to hide your scars. You don't have to hide your sin, because those are the places that Jesus brings resurrection. So here's Chad Bird. You've heard me quote again. He's a He actually is a pastor that's out of ministry because he wrecked his life in sin. But he knows that he's saved by grace. Here's what he says. He says, God specializes in broken people. He has a long history of being intimately and graciously involved in the lives of people who screw up on a large scale. No matter how badly we have wrecked our lives, our Father is in the thick of that disaster to begin the work of making us whole again. Why? Because he is a resurrected God on third day. That's who he is. That means God can resurrect dead marriages. That means God can resurrect dead friendships that you think that you've ruined. That means God can resurrect from places of addiction. If he brought new life to Jesus, and while we were dead in our sins, he saved us, he can keep working. He's really that good. He's really that powerful. Let me say this, and I'll ask if there's any kind of application. I think one of the things that means... it's like we have to figure out how to feed on the hope of the resurrection. Okay? You know, there's an old saying that you are what you eat. If all I eat is junk food, I guess that'll actually shape my physical body and I'll become like that. And actually, if all you eat is junk food, it actually changes your taste buds so that you begin to crave that as well. Okay? That's actually a true principle spiritually. Whatever you feed on is going to shape you. And so you got to ask yourself a question. What are you becoming like? Because you're growing in one of two ways. You're either growing in cynicism, in bitterness, in fear, in hopelessness, because you think your life is kind of one big disappointment, right? And you're feeding on that. Or you're growing in humility and thankfulness and graciousness and joy. Because you realize life is one big thing of God giving you what you don't deserve, because he's gracious and he's a God of resurrection. My question is, what are you actually feeding on? It is so easy to feed on cynicism in today's world. It is so easy to feed on sin, my own sin, the ways I hurt others. All that is true. It's so easy to feed on hopeless. I kind of don't need anybody else to tell me that the world is screwed up or that I am. I know that. I need you to help me feed on the fact that God is alive. And I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago, because I feel like that sometimes. And that's what a community of the resurrection looks like, is you begin to feed on those things, because that's what's real. I don't know. Anybody else got any other kind of like comments or things? We got 2 minutes. Are ways that you found to feed on the resurrection in places of darkness or death? Anything? Yeah, so where was Jesus when his body was in the tomb? And is it like Jonah? So he's saying there's some things that are like Jonah that are like me that's not literal. So what our tradition believes is that when Jesus dies, his body goes into the grave, like what happens to us, and then his soul goes to be with the Father and awaits the resurrection. And 3 days later, his soul reunites with his body, glorified, comes out, new creation. And that's the promise for me and you, that if you're connected to Jesus, when we die, our body goes to the grave. Still united to Christ, our soul goes to be with the Father and with Jesus, and we await our resurrection, where our bodies will come out of the grave and everything will be made new again. So that'd be my quick explanation. Look, it's Easter and people already kind of crammed to come in. I'm going to end this a little early. Let me pray. Lord, thank you for being unchangeable, for promising to be the God that brings life out of places of death. Man, we just all have stories of decay and hurt and death and despair. But man, would you break through and give us hope where we are hopeless, and see that your resurrection power is greater than death and Satan, than even our own sin, and bring us to believe that this morning. In your son's name I pray. Amen.